It's Outdoor Explorer, and our topic today is summer camp. Philosophically, camp is a way of fighting a trend in our culture towards kids spending all their time in front of the tube. Practically, camp is a place for kids during the summer when parents are at work and school is out. But for kids, camp can be life-changing. I don't think anyone ever forgets the time they spent in summer camp as a child. You learn, you have fun, you freak out, you fall in love. It's a first chance to live on your own, and it can be like a lifetime in a week. On today's show, we'll look at all those aspects of summer camp, as well as how to pick the right camp, dealing with homesickness, cost, and of course, learning outdoor skills. And I've got a great lineup of guests today to talk about that. Our regular go-to gal to talk about kids and the outdoors is Erin Kirkland from AKA On The Go.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us. And for the first half, we're going to be talking with Tom Burrick, who is the director of Trailside Discovery Camp, which he tells me is now the largest day camp in the state of Alaska.
Yes, we are. We will serve over 3,300 kids this summer. We're already at 2,700 kids registered this summer. Wow.
That is a lot. And we welcome your comments on Facebook. Go to Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and post a comment, and we'll be responding to what you have to say on the air. So, Tom, you're a camp with a mission. I mean, it's not just about finding something for kids to do when school's out.
No, our camp is an environmental education day camp, and we're looking to get kids outdoors, connected to nature, get them unconnected from the mass media that are now involved in. But we do have an educational aspect to what we're doing. We want them to learn about nature, understand it. And I hear many stories from parents how their children, when they go out on a camping trip, have all these great stories and what type of tree they're seeing, what type of rocks they're looking at. And they usually tell them a lot of great information they learned at camp.
Yeah. Well, I remember that when my oldest son, who is now 21, was one of your little ones at Trailside. And taking him on a hike to Thunderbird Falls, you know, the next week, and he just like stops and this is what this is, Daddy.
Right.
This is what
yeah.
this is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, your kid is suddenly seeing the world in a new way.
Yes, yes. And one thing is we start with ages 4 to 5. So we start young and we get them going in the outdoors, and it's a progressive program where as they learn and go through the different age groups, we get into wilderness camping trips, and then we get them out into the field, getting that experience. And once they get out into the field in our camping programs, they build their character, and they learn so much more through the experiential nature of what they're doing.
Whereas for the younger kids, it's a day camp experience, just doing activities. And
right. The younger, we are mainly day camp at the Kemble Creek Science Center. We're at the Eagle River Nature Center. We're in Palmer and Wasilla, so we have various sites, but we are mainly a day camp, but we do get into wilderness trip camping.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Trailside Discovery Camp is linked on our website at alaskapublic.org. Just click on today's show when you get to the site. And I found about 10 other camps to link there, and many others. There's some more that have come in via Facebook to tell us about their camps. Erin, there's a ton of different things for kids to do in Anchorage.
And there,
so
yeah.
Research seems like the biggest challenge to figure out which one you want to do.
Well, yeah, and Tom makes a great point that they're the largest day camp, but there are overnight camps affiliated with, you know, I know we're going to have Girl Scouts on a little bit later, and we've got Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and specialty camps and church-related camps. So there are literally hundreds of options. And I know the Anchorage Daily News puts out that great summer camp guide each year. In fact, that should be coming out pretty soon. That's going to help parents make some decisions. But, you know, one of the things we talked about is accreditation. I think I mentioned that on Facebook. And how do you know, how to choose the right camp for your kid and what kind of regulations they have to go through. And, you know, I had to do digging every year to find out what's going to be best for my own kiddo.
Mm-hmm. How do you make the choice? I mean, are you present a series of options to your kid, or how do you pick the camp for this summer?
You know, that's an excellent question, Charles, because what I do a lot is ask other parents. And I will say that Trailside Discovery, you know, that's usually the first answer people give me. And my son's been going since he was 5, I think. But I also ask my son really what he wants to do, because summer camp is one of those things that if it's not a good fit, they're not going to have any fun. And you're not going to have any fun either, because you're going to have to hear about mm-hmm. you know, what a miserable day they had or a miserable week they had. So I think you have to balance that with what your needs as a parent are, especially if you're a working parent, and what the kid really wants to do. Because this is summer, and it's supposed to be fun.
You can't just warehouse a kid. You got to find something that really speaks to them.
Exactly. Because kids, especially now, there's so many different options for their different interests, especially with mm-hmm. respect to the outdoors. So you kind of have to find their little tailored interest and go with that.
You know, there's that Kincaid Adventure Camp, and I don't know if Margaret Timmerman is still the person
who does
it.
I believe so.
My older kids, they thought about getting back to that all year. And it was very simple. It wasn't like a lot of complex activities, but there's something about her personality that just turned them on.
Excellent point about the simplicity. And I know mm-hmm. one of the great things about Trailside, too, is that it's not fancy. They're learning simple skills about their environment and the world that they live. And that's the stuff they eat up. And Tom, I'm sure you mm-hmm. see it every single day.
Yeah, what we're doing is the kids have great time learning outdoor education in their school system, and then we enhance that. We give them more experience, more time outdoors where they grow in ways that they may not get in school. So they learn about wetlands, forests, mammals, outdoor skills, and they're getting a lot of new information that will help them grow even more than what they've learned in the public mm-hmm. schools.
That's hands-on stuff.
Yeah, and Aaron mentioned matching the kid to the camp. Do you have kids that, like, just don't like it? You know, I mean, it seems like they have a lot of fun when I'm ever there, but maybe that happens sometimes.
Well, usually it happens. A parent will call and they'll say, I'm not sure what class. And I tell them the best thing to do is pick what you think they're most interested in. For example, in ages 4 and 5, they might do sockeye scouts, where they'll learn about salmon. So I'd let them know the best thing is to pick a topic they're most interested in. They're all formatted the same out there, hands-on experiential learning, lots of camp fun mixed in, camp singing, camp songs, and the educational aspect. Mm-hmm. And the best thing is to pick something they're most interested in. Once they get to camp, they have a great time. They pretty much, I'm convinced, whatever they pick, they're going to have a great time. They just don't realize
it. I haven't seen a lot of kids that seem unhappy there.
Yeah.
It seems like the energy level of the counselors is huge too, and something about kids spending time with young adults as opposed to their older parents. You know, these kids who are just in college or just, you know, that age match is big.
It is. The really unique thing that happens is the kids see the staff as mentors, role models, and they have this experience with them they can't get with their parents or with friends, and they look up to the staff. The staff are so excited about the mission of Trailside and what we're doing. They really believe in it, the importance of what we're doing, especially with all the electronic oversaturation. And they're pumped up by the kids. That's why I do. I just really enjoy being around the kids during the summer. My office is out in the Puffin Cave, and I have a great time. The kids are going by noisy. I love it. And the staff as well. They just, you know, they want the kids to grow up, succeed in life. So they're mm-hmm. they're helping them do that.
And, okay, it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking, obviously, about summer camps. My guests are Tom Burrick, who is the director of Trailside Discovery Camp, and Aaron Kirkland of AK On The Go. And okay, let's get into some of the nitty gritty here. Item number one, I was a shy child.
Oh.
I was terrified of the first day of camp. Oh. I actually went away for like all summer long type camp,
oh, wow.
which I don't even really know if that exists anymore. It used to be more of a thing, you know.
You know, on the East Coast, it still does. And actually, that was going to be a question I had for Tom. I mean, are there any camps where you go 6 weeks, 8 weeks? You're talking about those kind of entire summer things. I'm not even sure we have those.
I don't think so. But I mean, you get kids who are going away for a week on an outdoor trip. I mean, do you run into homesickness and how do you handle that?
We don't in our day camps, mm-hmm. though I have a really interesting story about our mm-hmm. 4 and 5 year olds. It happens quite a lot. But in our wilderness trips, we actually can run into that. And they'll go out on a trip and they'll be maybe the first time away from home on an overnight camping trip. During the day, they're doing great. But then as soon as the nighttime falls, mm-hmm. they start getting homesick and it's something new they haven't done before. So we do run into it.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of this is something everybody goes through once, right? At least
it is. And the staff are trained in how to deal with it. So they uh-huh. comfort the child and, you know, talk them through and have uh-huh. try to redirect them to the upcoming new day and all the things that are happening. But before they even go out, we spend a lot of time getting prepared to go out. So we work on icebreakers, group building, help them to make a new friend. Mm-hmm. We recommend a stuffy on the trip, a stuffed animal for sure. Mm-hmm. That's highly recommended. So we definitely want the kids to succeed. And then we work with parents. So if they are crying and maybe it's going on for a period of time, we'll call the parent and say, hey, this is happening. We'll call the parent to work with them. Mm-hmm. And we just want the child to be successful for sure while they're out there.
Aaron, any thoughts on getting your kid ready for camp so that they don't go through that?
Yeah, you know, I was a shy kid too, and I think you and I talked about this. My first summer at camp, it was just miserable. I mean, I didn't know anybody at all, and I was just kind of thrust upon it. I didn't really, I think, have an understanding about what exactly we were going to do. And having that predictability factor with mm-hmm. your kid is huge, especially these younger ones. You know, my son is actually going out with Trailside for one of the overnight ones this summer, and we've talked a lot about where you're going to go. Okay, we're going to be at Eklutna. You know where that is. We're going to talk about what you're going to do. And we're going to meet your counselors and make sure that you're feeling comfortable, kiddo, before you head out there. Taking those items, like the comfort items, are really, really big. I also suggest sometimes take a buddy with you. While it's really important for some kids to just mix and mingle, some kids really need the security of another child that they're very close to.
Sign up your kids, find out where your friends.
That works really well. We recommend that. And parents usually know, they can gauge where they're at if they're ready. And they usually let us know, too, that, hey, this could be the case. For a parent, though, it's good to talk through with them what's going to happen, but definitely a good thing to not do is say, hey, if you do get homesick, I'm going to pick you up, and not, say, mm-hmm. we'll work together to make this happen, but not give them an out where if they do, they'll automatically want to get picked up, which can mm-hmm. create problems. But
And get out of there. I mean, that's the other thing I found is when a parent is present, the kid is much more dependent. As soon as the parent's gone, they start
Absolutely. And I think summer camp is one of those milestones for us parents too, mm-hmm. To shut down the helicopter and walk away, because this is we're all growing up here, mm-hmm. and I think once you do it, it's okay.
Yeah, Tom, tell me about the overnights and the outdoor skills you teach. Yes. Some of which are if you have some things that are done on the water, which are somewhat hazardous, and mm-hmm. there's some situations where kids have to stretch their physical boundaries and in terms of what they're capable of. What are the sort of outdoor things you do, and how do you go about teaching those?
Sure. Well, we actually start teaching outdoor skills at age 6. We do wilderness survival courses and camping courses. So we start early where we're getting them used to being outdoors and the camping skills. Very basically then, ages 8, 9, we get into more skill building. We do canoeing, kayaking, mountain biking, hiking classes. Again, in camping classes, orienteering. So we're getting them prepared. So our program's set up where they learn as they get older, to where by the time they're 8, they are ready, and they'll get out and they'll pick a trip, canoeing, kayaking, mountain biking, hiking course that they can go out on for a two-night camp out into the state parks, usually is where we go. Mm-hmm. But we definitely always do skill building before they go out, be it canoeing, kayaking, mountain biking, hiking. We spend time on those skills and safety, wildlife safety, hot trail etiquette, leave mm-hmm. no trace camping skills. So we spend a lot of time preparing them. So when they're out there, that's another thing that helps them be comfortable and ready.
And how do you make sure that the people you're hiring, who are obviously just seasonal summer employees, know the skill well enough to be safe in doing it, then also are safe people themselves for the kids to be around?
Right. So I do hire wilderness guides, and through the American Camp Association, we have many standards we have to follow of operation and certain things we need to meet. With all the guides, we have to have proof of their skill, like in writing from other organizations. They have to have wilderness first responder certification, CPR. We all have small watercraft certification training. They all have to have that if they're on a water sport. And then the wilderness manager documents it. He'll observe them in the field, or we do a pre-camp training with our guides, and he has a sign-off that he observed these skills with them. Mm. So, and then we do have curriculum set up for each class that we're doing. So pretty intensive, actually, before we do it. We don't just
complex.
Get out. And
I feel better.
we spend a lot. And they all carry pepper spray when they're out in the field. Uh-huh. We have training on that. Each trip has a sat cell phone in case there is a problem.
No, it's a complex operation. And if I, as an adult, was going to go and learn to go kayaking or learn to do any of these activities, I would pay quite a bit of money to do that.
Right.
And I know, I mean, how much does one of your week-long out-of-camp, wilderness things cost?
Yeah, so for the 5-day programs at Wilderness Trips, the Tuesday through Friday camp out. Those are $275 a week, and that involves all the training, the food, the transportation.
Wow.
It's a really great deal. And for us, the main thing, we want all kids to be able to do that. You know, that's our main goal. And we do have a scholarship fund where, to me, if a kid wants to go to Trust Lake Camp, I'm going to get them there, like whatever it takes. So we the price, of comparing it to maybe a private organization, it's very low and affordable. But even then, we do have funding available for people.
So if a parent says, oh, I want my kid to be able to do this, but $275, they just call you up on the phone? Or how do they do? How do they handle getting a scholarship?
They usually do. If they're interested in sending their kid, we put out information on our website and the organizations, but they'll call us and say, hey, how do I do this? I say, just fill out an application, and we have a group that reviews them. And then, you know, gives out funds at that point. So real easy to do. Fill out application, turn it into us, and we'll review it quickly and let them know.
You know, Aaron, we're getting actually a few weeks away from the end of school here. And I know there are people listening thinking, oh, I really got to deal with that. But in fact, a lot of camps are already booked up.
Yes.
And it's something you have to plan way ahead. And for those of us who work full time, it's more than just getting something fun for the kid. It's actually like having the kid have somewhere to go.
Yes, indeed. And that before and after care, which kind of seems to be the buzz phrase now, is pretty important, because if the camp goes from 9 to 4, most parents, you know, can't make that work without some sort of before and after care. So the trend is ever increasing to have like 7:30, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And those are really the slots that are going to fill up fast. I know that almost every day camp in town is going to offer some sort of before and after care. Now, not all of them do, because some are so specialized, it just kind of, you know, is what that they're working with. But I know Trailside Discovery does, and we've utilized that. And I know Parks and Recreation, Anchorage Parks and Rec, that Kincaid Outdoor Camp, I know that theirs is a little bit shorter. But there are so many, and I would just urge parents to grab hold of that summer camp guide, because when it comes out in the Anchorage Daily News, it has hundreds.
Yeah, there's enough slots for everybody at somewhere.
You know, there are camps for everybody and every skill level. You know, we haven't talked about kids with special needs, but there are definitely camps out there for those kiddos. There's art camps, there's horseback riding, there's farms, there's, you know, all kinds of learning opportunities. You just have to dig around a little bit.
How do you feel about, I guess I think that when you send your kid off and you have to get them there pretty early, and then you pick them up after aftercare pretty late, they're really tired. Have you noticed that?
Like, yes.
They're like,
oh yeah.
You don't even want to deal with them.
Yeah. I mean, our house is probably 3 miles from Camel Creek Science Center, and most day, usually, you know, we hit that midweek slump. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he's asleep before we even get back in the driveway. That's one of the things parents need to know and be okay with, is that your kid is going to be dirty, your kid is going to be exhausted, but that means they're learning something and they're having a great time.
They may not even have enough energy to get on the computer and play a shoot 'em game, right?
Excellent point. Yeah, and maybe we don't want that.
Yeah. Tom, how do you deal with a kid that shows up with an iPhone or an iPod or whatever electronics?
Yeah, that's a great question. We send information to parents prior to them attending camp, and a big item is no electronics. And we absolutely don't allow them. If they're there, we ask the kid to put them away in their bag, and then, or we take them and hold them and give them to the parent and mention to the parent we're a non-electronic camp where we let kids have that. So we definitely don't allow it. We want kids totally to get away from that. The pre and after care you mentioned, we do a lot of social interacting activities, which they don't normally get a lot of because they are plugged in quite a bit. So we don't allow it.
Do you find that in this day and age, there are kids who are so addicted to that kind of thing that it's tough for them to give up? I've seen that at times, that kids like almost become anxious when they don't have their electronics.
It does. I see it a lot when aftercare starts. Once our program ends at 4, kids will start asking, hey, can we bring our video games? They start thinking about it and wanting to do it. And the contraband will show up some days, you know, that they just smuggle it into camp and want to play it. So it is a part of their lives. And, you know, to just drop it for 8 or more hours, that's a big change, even for a day. So we do see it.
But that's all part of your mission, is getting kids to connect to nature.
It is. on average, kids spend at least 40 hours in some kind of electronic media interaction. So we are the one opportunity to like get, not have it at all.
A full-time job equivalent.
Full-time, and they're going to school full-time. So camp is one place they don't have that. It's a huge change for them, and it's really great. They get to learn new skills, meet people one-on-one, interact socially and emotionally in different ways. So they're gaining so many lifelong skills that will help them be successful in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe getting them to care about something outside of themselves and outside of this electronic universe.
Absolutely, and we do service projects with them, mm-hmm. and so service to community. We work around with other groups, older kids, mentor the younger kids. We do a book reading program where we read to the kids 30 minutes a day. So mm-hmm. we do many programs beyond kind of the environmental education mm-hmm. to help them be successful.
Well, fantastic. Thanks so much for being with us, Tom. We're going to have another camp director in the second half of the show, and we've had Tom Burke, who's the director of Trailside Discovery Camp for the first half. I do appreciate you being with us today, and it's a great camp.
Sure. Thank you so much. It's very nice to be here.
And we'll be back with Aaron Kirkland from AK On The Go a little bit more in the second half. But right now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer Calendar. This Saturday, May 4th, try your hand hunting mammoth or rhino with a spear thrower, or hunt seal from a kayak at the 15th annual Alaska Atlatl Fun and Throw this Saturday, May 4th, at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. There'll be five main ranges for ages 8 and up, and special range for hunters under 8. For more info on the Alaska Atlatl Fun and Throw, contact the Alaska Native Heritage Center. If you don't know what an atlatl is, it's a traditional throwing device, which extends your ability to throw a spear or a dart. Sounds pretty interesting and certainly unique. The Kenai Birding Festival is coming up May 16th through May 19th. Suitable for the beginner as well as the advanced birder, the three-day event includes a series of discussions and birding field expeditions. And this year, a children's program has been added to the schedule of events. For more info on the Kenai Bird Festival, go to kenaibirdfest.com. The 22nd annual Anchorage Salmon Run is Saturday, May 4th. This is a really fun run. Choose from 2K, 5K, or 10K walk or run, immediately followed by an old-fashioned carnival. The race starts and ends at Inlet View Elementary School in downtown Anchorage and winds along the Anchorage Coastal Trail. For more info on the Salmon Run, go to anchoragesalmonrun.com. And we'll have links to all of these events on our site at alaskapublic.org. Finally, the Great Alaska Aviation Gathering is this week at the Ted Stevens International Airport in Anchorage. To tell us a little bit more about it, we have Dee Hansen, Executive Director of the Alaska Airmen's Association, with us by phone. Hi, Dee.
Hi, how are you? We're getting ready. We're moving airplanes in as we speak over to the huge FedEx hangar there off of Postmark Drive.
Oh, I know this is like one of the biggest events of the year, and just it seems like all of Anchorage goes.
It's big for the aviation community, but just to let everyone know that it is open to the general public and admission is free, and it's a great family event.
What are some of the highlights that folks can see?
Well, this year we are actually celebrating 100 years of flight. The first flight took place on July 3rd, 1913, up in Fairbanks. And this year we have a couple of unique aircraft that are inside static display. We've got a 1931 Pilgrim, as well as a Japanese Zero. They're inside.
Wow.
Yes, pretty fantastic. Plus, we've got some light sport aircraft. We've got corporate aircraft. We've got a little bit of everything, new manufacture, rebuilds, Alaskan bush planes. We've got a great conference schedule that runs concurrent with the trade show. And we also have a great kids program this year. We're finding that our young aviators are basically where our future is for aviation employment around the state, and we want to make sure that we've got a program for them, too.
Oh, that's neat. So how does that work? Do people need to sign up in advance?
No. Just come, check in, ask where the kids' corner is. We're calling it our Junior Aviators Club, and we've got a really cool little passport book set up with about 12 different questions. All the exhibitors that are in this book are on board. They are prepared to answer that question for you. It might be the year that an aircraft was manufactured or what's the newest aircraft in the FedEx fleet.
I see.
And then they'll get a stamp or something else. We also have the FPG9, which is a foam paper glider 9-inch that we have templates to cut out, so we'll have a little competition there, as well as the Challenger Learning Center will be there with hands-on interactive exhibits for the kids.
Wow, that's tremendous. So it's free, so there must be a corporate sponsor. Somebody's paying for all this, because this sounds like an expensive event.
It is, but I tell you what, the community is behind us. We have, of course, our main sponsors of FedEx and UPS, but we also have other major sponsors that come in. But mostly it's the exhibitors. You know, it's the exhibitors that come. We're a nonprofit. Our mission is to promote general aviation in the state of Alaska, and this is our largest community outreach program that we do. And it's kind of what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we use what the revenue that we generate from the booth sales actually pays for everything. But then we also have a lot of in-kind sponsorships. Airline Support is running a shuttle down the length of Postmark, and they do this just to help out. So don't get discouraged if you come out to the airport, hit Postmark Drive, and you see cars parked, you know, four wide all the way to the post office. Just flag the shuttle down, and they'll take you to the FedEx hangar.
Okay, so it's just anywhere out there in that eastern side of the airport near where the FedEx is and the post office, and there'll be a shuttle, and you don't have to pay a darn thing.
That's correct.
Great.
Everyone is invited.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being with us. It sounds like a fabulous event. It's the Great Alaska Aviation Gathering this weekend at the airport. And Dee Hansen, Executive Director of Alaska Airmen's Association, has been with us. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. And I just want to add that website with more directions is greatalaskaaviationgathering.org.
Great. And we'll have that linked on our alaskapublic.org site as well. All right. Thanks, Dee. And we will be back in just a minute with more of Outdoor Explorer.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. If you're listening in the evening, it is a recorded rebroadcast and will not be taking phone calls. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime, download podcasts, and see what's coming up on future programs at alaskapublic.org.
We're back for more of Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and our topic today is summer camps, getting your kid off the sofa, away from the computer, outdoors, into the great away. They can be called, and doing so while you're probably at work toiling away, they can be having fun and learning. And for the second half of the show, I have another camp director. Tom Burke from Trailside Camp is gone now, and Amanda Block is here now from Girl Scouts of Alaska. Thanks for being with us, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
And Erin Kirkland, my kid expert, is still here.
That's right.
She does the AK on the go, and she's been posting on our Facebook site, Outdoor Explorer, so you can link to her from there and also carry on the discussion, because it's a great place to put up ideas and questions and announcements and anything you want to say. I noticed there's something here from National Outdoor Leadership School with their 2-week to 3-month trips that are available for kids at 16 and plus. There's other camps and folks that are logging in and telling us about what they're up to. Teen camps at Alaska Kayak Academy. And on our site at alaskapublic.org, we've got links to a bunch of camps, about 10 different camps. There's always some research involved in choosing exactly the right camp. So Amanda Block, Girl Scouts, you run some of the larger overnight camps in Alaska, and lots of girls are involved, I know.
We do, yeah. We have camps across the state of Alaska, both resident camps and day camps. Our biggest resident camp is in Wasilla. It's called Camp Toga Woods, and over 700 girls a summer go to Camp Toga Woods. We also have a resident camp down in Juneau. And then beyond that, we have day camps throughout our Girl Scout Council. So outside of Chugiak, then throughout Southeast Alaska, and all through the YK Delta and Bristol Bay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a huge, yeah, a huge logistical operation as well as everything else. Huh?
It is. Yeah. Over 2,700 girls a summer go to Girl Scout camp. And you don't have to be a Girl Scout to go.
Oh, you don't?
Nope. Any girl can go to Girl Scout camp.
You have to be a girl. You just don't have to be a Girl Scout.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I have never been to Girl Scouts camp.
Thank goodness. It may surprise you.
Tell me, what's a week at Girl Scout camp like?
It's great. You know, the vast majority of time girls are outside, and that's the goal of Girl Scout camp. A goal of ours is that 90% of the time girls are outside and exploring the outdoor environment. But girls get a variety of experiences, and that really is one of the points of camp for us. And within that, what we hope is that girls get a really compassionate look at leadership by working with their camp counselors, and that it's a hands-on look at leadership. Mm-hmm. So while girls are seeing that, they're also experiencing and getting a chance to develop their own leadership goals by working with other girls, by cooperating together, by practicing teamwork, and actually by having conflicts and failing and learning from those failures and putting themselves back together and figuring out how to move forward in a better way. Mm-hmm. And they do that not only by interacting together, but having all the fun camp experiences, mm-hmm. canoeing, kayaking, hiking, trying our climbing tower. We have a 35-foot climbing tower.
We've got a great picture
camp.
Of that on our website at alaskapublic.org. It's a girl like working her way up, and
she's got
a big smile on her face.
Yeah. And if you can get to the top, it's an amazing view of the mountains and the lake. But that's not the point. You know, the point is to get out there and try and to see what you can do and have all those other girls, you know, coaching you and cheering you on and to, you know, experience something that's challenging and a little bit scary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's also a video on our site that I think you gave us, her story about creating leaders and creating this character building aspect of camp.
Absolutely. You know, character building at camp, not just Girl Scout camp, but all camps is huge. And, you know, I think camp is a natural extension of the school year. It's not the same as academic learning, but it is a different kind of learning. It's an extremely important, vital part of childhood and learning. And at Girl Scout camp specifically, we've taken on this challenge of character development for girls, specifically character development in three big areas: grit, self-control, and gratitude. Knowing that if girls and children have those three character traits when they grow up, they're much more likely to have healthy, happy, fulfilling lives.
And that's it. And Erin, I mean, you think about your child going away and having fun, but I mean, that's if they come back and they've got all these great qualities. I guess that's part of growing up.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And I'm just listening to Amanda talk and think, wow, you know, these are just such important attributes that we as parents want to be passing on to our kids. And sometimes it takes the push. And that's why summer camp can be so valuable. You find those other older role models that are going to cause your kid to listen and take this all in, because, you know, we as parents, kids don't always listen to what we're telling them, but they see by example, they see as a team, they're working toward a goal. And that's one of the beautiful intrinsic kind of values of summer camp that I find to be really important.
And it's parenting is not that easy all the time. And especially
it's not.
Like if I think about I want to teach my son to have grit and fortitude and be independent. How am I going to do that?
Yeah, how am I going to do that? Yeah, exactly. And you know, we all know kids have more of success learning something when they're having fun, because then they don't really know that they're learning that. And let's say learning to build a campfire, build a fire. You know, there's these steps you have to take, and these are why. And as a parent, okay, you have to do this because you have to do this. But if you watch another adult say, well, you know, we're going to build a fire, and I'm going to show you how, and boom. By the end of summer, wow, they know how to do that. You didn't really have to teach them per se, but they're, you know, your counselors are modeling this leadership and teamwork and all these skills, and they're going to pick that up.
So we got a couple of comments coming in from Facebook. This one I'm a little late to read. listener saying that their 9-year-old loves a Trailside Discovery. And then Jim is posting that summer camp's not just for little ones. Check out teen adventure camps for pack rafting and sea kayaking, both 6-day camps. Amazing amount of different stuff you can do. What kind of skills do you teach in Girl Scout camp? Is that an emphasis, or is it more just on the fun and the character part?
It's both. So all those things get combined, and Girl Scout camp is a combination of learning hard skills, you know, canoeing, kayaking, backpacking skills. We do some high adventure trips, so girls can do progression. They can come, in fourth and fifth grade and learn those basic skills. They can also come in high school and do wilderness trips where they go, for 6 days and backpack or canoe in the Kenai Peninsula and Swan Lakes. So it's a combination of learning hard skills, and it's then also putting into that all the intangible things like character development and leadership and things from the Girl Scout Promise and Law of learning leadership and how to be courageous and be strong and have confidence and how to make the world a better place. So it's a combination of those two things. And some of what makes camp special is that you can do it outdoors and you can do it with people who are just a little bit older than you, who you look up to and you respect because you can see that they're just a little bit beyond
you. The counselors are going to be college
exactly.
students.
And, yeah. Right. And there's something magical about that because they're not your parents. And there is this really cool connection that you can
you
have.
You want to be like your counselor. You don't want to be like your parent, right?
Exactly.
That's the last person you want to be like.
Exactly. Right? And it's a really intense experience. So you're able to build all of this stuff really quickly, and it stays with you because camp is this very magical environment, and it lasts a really long time. And the studies have been done that camp and the impact of camp stays with you.
I remember every minute of it.
Yeah.
But we were talking earlier with Tom and Aaron and I were opening our hearts about our homesick experiences. I'm sure you must deal with a lot with your 2,700 kids. Mm-hmm. You must deal with a lot of homesick kids. How do you do that? And what does a parent do about that?
Yeah, it's I think there's a lot of preparing before you get to camp. Mm-hmm. And I think the first thing is to acknowledge that homesickness is okay. The vast majority of kids and people in this world experience homesickness. I do before I go to camp every year. It's perfectly normal. And it's just about, leaving your home environment. And both parents and kids who are going to camp experience that. And for the vast majority of kids, that's normal and it's not going to create problems. Only 7% of kids, when they experience homesickness, is it that severe homesickness that they're not going to get over and they're not going to be able to have a good camp experience. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good sort of thing to know. Mm-hmm. But involving kids in the process of picking a camp and then getting ready for camp, that's critical so that kids are involved and they're vested. Then I think there's a lot that adults can do to make sure that when kids are at camp, they've set up the right system. So make sure you know how you're going to be in contact with your child and that when you're writing letters, you're writing the right kind of letters. Mm-hmm. You're not writing letters that say, we miss you so much. Life isn't the same without you while you're
great
at camp.
Point.
But you're writing letters that say, we're sure you're having a great time and that you're having lots of fun and you're making new friends. And even if you are missing home, you're learning how to be so much stronger while you're at camp. Mm-hmm. And you're really encouraging that. I think the other thing parents need to do is be ready for that first letter that comes that says, I'm miserable and I want to come home, and not overreact.
Mm-hmm. I got to tell you.
I've written that letter.
I did too. And it was that very first year I went. I was 8, turning 9. And my mom saved those postcards. And last time I was home, she showed me. And I had drawn this really sad face and I'm crying and I'm angry and I hate it here and I can't stand it. But it goes back to preparing because I think back in the 70s, there wasn't a whole lot of preparing. You're going to camp, hop on the bus and we'll see you later. And I wish she'd known because she said she felt so guilty sending it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But great point about the letters and knowing how to prepare in this positive way. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. What about care packages?
Those are great. Absolutely. Yeah. I would say make sure you talk to the camp and see what you can and can't put in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially in Alaska, a lot of camps will say, do not send food. You know, there's animal issues. But those are fantastic. And make sure you talk to your kid and see, you know, and you know your kids best. So make sure you know what will or won't trigger, you know, episodes for your kids. So, you know, if it's good to send pictures, send pictures. If it's good to send like that one safety stuffed animal, send that along. Mm-hmm. So I think care packages are fantastic. Also, I'll say a good camp director is worth their weight in gold. You should be able to call that camp director and not necessarily talk to your kid. Different camps have different rules about whether you can talk to campers or not. Mm-hmm. But you should be able to call a camp director and say, you know, how's my kid doing? Can you just give me an update? And good camp directors will let you know, and they'll be more than willing to give you an update and work with you.
Because the mom and dad might be freaking out too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about summer camp on Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Woolforth, and my guests this half hour are Amanda Block from the Girl Scouts of Alaska and Aaron Kirkland, a.k.a. On the Go, our sort of go-to outdoor child expert. Amanda, how long do the camps last and how much do they cost?
We run day camps that are 5 days long, and our resident camps range in length. So we have 3-day programs, 6-day programs, and 12-day programs. So it kind of just depends on where kids are at in terms of their development and what they're ready for. And that's a conversation parents should have with their kids, and then we'll help them with that if they need more guidance.
So maybe try the 3-day or the 6-day before you go to the 12-day. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes kids surprise parents. I think sometimes it's parents who aren't ready for camp when kids are ready to just totally jump in. Yeah. So it's both parents and kids being ready for those experiences. Mm-hmm. In terms of cost, our day camps start at $200 for the week. Resident camp ranges from $185 to $650, depending on the length and then what that experience is, whether it's an in-camp program or one of those wilderness programs where you're like going backpacking for 6 days. Mm-hmm. One of the things to know is that we have scholarship money available to any girl who needs financial assistance. And, you know, Girl Scouts is wonderful in being able to offer that to girls, again, whether they're a Girl Scout or not. Girl Scouts isn't alone in that, but we're certainly able to do that to any girl who has that need.
And to apply for that, just call and ask for the director and sort of explain the situation.
Exactly.
Do you cover the entire summer, and do you recommend that the parent who needs a place to put their kid just put their kid in camp all summer, or is that a bad idea?
Well, I think, again, it depends on the family and the kid. We certainly have girls who go to camp all summer long, and they love it. Mm-hmm. We have some girls who just go 1 week. We have girls who will go to our camp 1 week and then trailside the next week and campfire the next week and get a really varied experience. So, you know, it's parents kind of figuring out what's best for their kids. If a girl does go to our camp all summer, every single week is going to be a different experience, because one of the things that Girl Scouts is all about is it being girl-led. So girls get a lot of input into the program. One of the things counselors do, not just the first day of camp, but throughout the week of camp, is talk to girls and say, what do you want to get out of the program? Mm-hmm. How can we make this program really special for you? And then they work with girls to make all those things happen. Mm-hmm. So camp looks different every single week.
As a male, this is a difficult question to ask, but I have seen the movies, and I know that girls can be mean to each other. I don't know, Aaron, if you want to weigh in on that. And,
gosh.
And that would, I think, be a challenge as a counselor or camp director.
Well, yeah, and what you were saying about problem solving and conflict resolution and all that kind of stuff. And girls are going to be girls, and you're going to have these interesting alliances that develop. And then, you know, even if you go with a friend, that friend might meet some other friend, I think that's part of the whole, you got to keep them busy enough with outdoor activities that they're not thinking about all that kind of stuff. But I think that's kind of inevitable. I mean, every camp I went to as a kid, there was just always some of that. And then, you know, you throw boys in the mix and it's all over.
Well, at least they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, well, you know, well, I've seen those movies too. Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts dancing.
There's something about camp that creates, that people want to make movies about that aren't going to make kids freak out about camp.
Well, and I think traditionally that's for those kids in the middle school and on up, that's like the rite of passage almost, wouldn't you say, for some of these summer camps is that's how you grow up. You go to summer camp and you meet a boy and you write letters for 2 months and then, you know, forget about each other.
How do you deal with that stuff? Amanda?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it's the fear of a lot of parents. We work really hard to create something different, not a false reality, because we don't want that for our girls. But even among our staff, we are extremely clear. And we actually have something that we
Go ahead.
We call a no drama policy for our staff, where we say, we don't do any of this. We don't have drama. We don't have gossip, cliques, mean girl behavior. We very clearly define what we do and don't do. And we train our staff on how to create a very inclusive, supportive environment and how to shut down anything else, both among themselves as staff and with campers. Now, we don't ever guarantee for parents that that kind of stuff doesn't happen. We can't, you know, guarantee that doesn't happen. But we do guarantee for parents that when it does happen, and we watch and try to make sure we create an inclusive environment where that stuff doesn't. But when it does, we absolutely promise parents that we will deal with it immediately and directly, and we will help girls deal with it in a way that is supportive and helps everybody move forward in a way that they feel stronger and more connected and able to do something different in the future, both on the side of the girl who feels bullied and on the side of the girl who is bullied, because both of those people need help in order to do something different in the future. And they both deserve that support.
And that's going to be reality, unfortunately, and you do need to learn how to deal with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You still have room in your camps?
We do.
And what's the process for signing up and finding out if it's the right camp for you and all that?
So parents can go to our website at girlscoutsalaska.org and look at our full camp catalog and register online. Or they can give us a call at 800-478-7448 or 907-248-2250. And we can talk them through all the options and help them register.
All right. And for people in Anchorage, it would be the camp in Wasilla would be the primary one they're going to.
Either Wasilla or Chugiak.
Oh, Chugiak. Okay. Mm-hmm. I missed your mention of that.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a great topic, and I could talk about it for many, many more minutes, because I really love talking about kids. Kids and what they can do outdoors, and I think that what you're doing, Amanda, is actually a really important mission for environment and for all of culture, is like creating this togetherness in this non-electronic environment that people can be part of.
Absolutely.
So I've been talking with Amanda Block, who is with the Girl Scouts of Alaska, and in the studio with me here has been Aaron Kirkland. We've been talking about summer camps. And oh, and here's a message that came in on Facebook. Also, another good option to check out if you're down on the peninsula is the Homer Outdoor Wilderness Leaders, HOWL, Homer Outdoor Wilderness Leaders. That's a great acronym.
Yeah, they're good.
So now we're going to take a little bit of a slight left turn. I have another guest that we wanted to bring on the air. It's not about summer camps, but it's such an interesting topic. Brettwood Higman and Aaron McKittrick are doing an extraordinary trek with their children. They are circumnavigating Cook Inlet. Their company is called Ground Truth Trekking, groundtruthtrekking.org. And they're doing it walking and pack rafting. And they're on the trip right now. And we've got Aaron on the line to talk about this kind of amazing adventure. Aaron, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Charles. Thanks for having me on.
So where are you right now?
Right now, I am in Nikiski, kind of at the edge of Nikiski before the last house before the wilder stretch between here and Hope.
And you're walking northward along the west side of Cook Inlet, along the beach?
No, we're still on the east side. We're headed up to towards...
Right, I'm sorry, I meant east. It was backwards there, yeah.
Yeah. We're headed up, yeah, up around Turnagain towards Anchorage there, and then we're going to be going south along the west side to Cape Douglas.
And tell me about your family.
So my husband is Hig, short for Brettwood Higman, and I have two children, Katmai, who is four, is my son, and I have a daughter, Latuya, who is two.
And how do you travel? I remember carrying a baby on my back. That's probably how I would do a two-year-old. And four-year-old can really slow you down because they can be too big to carry and too slow to actually make much distance.
I think that's that you're underestimating four-year-olds is what you're doing. So basically, for the two-year-old, you're pretty right on there. I mean, I wear her on my back, you know, for most of the distance. I mean, she certainly gets down plenty to play and walk and such, but it's not really, you know, linear progress being made in those times. And the four-year-old, he, you know, when we are walking, he walks. You know, he gets breaks in sections where we're paddling and, you know, lots of breaks anytime, but it's not actually that hard for him to walk 6 or 7 miles in a day.
Wow. Well, I think he's probably really, really fit and really used to spending time outdoors as a four-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we've been doing trips like this with them since they were little, and also just, you know, probably what's more relevant is that a kid's not necessarily going to remember the last big expedition a year and a half ago, but, you know, they do go, we go hiking with them in Soldovia, where we live, all the time. And we also, in partnership with the village tribe there, lead a weekly group of kid hikers. So we take a whole bunch of the town's 5 and under children pretty much out into the woods once a week.
Oh, how fun. So tell me, what is a day's trekking like for you on this trip? I kind of know what the beaches are like along there. And, you know, you've got a kind of a big bluff, and then you've got a beach that might be kind of cobbled, not too easy to walk on, but that there might not be much beach there at high tide. How are you going about doing this?
Well, I mean, you know, like just the you know, yesterday coming around to Kiski, we were, you know, walking on the cobbled beach for a while, and then we stopped to take a lunch break and spent a long time watching belugas, actually, swimming around in front of the, you know, between us and the oil rigs over there, and then, you know, walk for most of the day, and then as the tide turned in our direction, we just got in our pack rafts and, you know, ran with the current for an hour or two, and that was a pretty easy day. There's other days where, you know, the wind is against you or the tides are wrong and paddling isn't an option, and so then we just walk the beach, and we've never had a spot where, you know, there's nowhere to be at high tide, although depending on how big the tides are, we've had to plan for them for sure, especially for campsites and, you know, also, you know, it might, when the really high tides come, it might be, you know, sometimes a good idea to wait a little bit before walking some particular stretch. Mostly the campsites, actually one of the things along the bluffs that we, you know, had to deal with is also, you know, there are rocks rolling down from those bluffs,
yeah,
which is not a problem if you're walking at the bottom of the beach, but means if you want to camp at the top of the beach, you have to choose your sites carefully to be in non-rock rolling areas.
Yeah, that is, it can be a little scary. So tell me just why. What made you decide to do this trip?
Oh, I think the why, you know, we have to go back actually many years before the kids. This is kind of a habit of ours, and we started doing these, you know, big trips, over a decade ago, and just because we liked being out in the wilderness and it was a lot of fun. And then the more we did things like that, the more we realized how much we could learn on these journeys. And so that sort of became our goal, and that sort of really is explicitly our goal for any journey, is we're out there to, you know, explore, we're out there to learn, we're also out there to have a good time. And, you know, when we were having kids, we didn't know what you could do with a kid, but then figured out that it's actually not that hard, and that, you know, this is a really great, you know, learning and exploring experience for them, too.
Mm-hmm. And you have a terrific website. And as you go along, you're sort of tracking where you are. And I see here that you're hoping to be in Anchorage by the 20th of May, and then in Tyonek by the 6th of June. Are you going to walk all the way up Kinnick Arm and then back down again and all the way down to Tyonek in that amount of time?
We're probably going to cross Kinnick Arm. We're probably just going to paddle across at Anchorage, and there's, you know, a few reasons for that. Actually, one of the major ones being the military base is that we don't want to walk along the highway, and we don't expect that it's, you know, possible to walk along the coast.
Yeah, it's. I've done some boating up there, and it's pretty. I was worried about you guys thinking about going up there because it's kind of quicksandy, and there's some really rough patches, and so you're trying to be safe. You're not trying to do a stunt here.
Oh no, we're not. I mean, we think very carefully about, you know, all the hazards, and we do, you know, as much as we can to mitigate them. I think probably, you know, I'm not entirely joking if I'd say the most dangerous thing we've done on the expedition so far is at the head of Kachemak Bay, where the Russian villages are. We went to visit someone in Voznesenska and let him give us a ride up and down from the beach on those switchbacks.
Oh my God, that road is. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Those are my home stomping grounds. Well, unfortunately, we don't have any more time, but I'm thinking that it would be great to have you on the show when the journey's done. So we'll keep in touch, and hopefully we can manage something along those lines.
Yes, I'd love to.
All right. Well, that was Erin McKittrick. Groundtruthtrekking.org is the website we were talking about. And her family is doing this extraordinary walk all the way around Cook Inlet. Earlier I was talking with Amanda Block from Girl Scouts of Alaska and Tom Burrick with the Trailside Discovery Camp about summer camps. All the information you want to find is at alaskapublic.org. And Erin Kirkland has been my trusty sidekick and helper in talking about kid outdoor issues, a.k.a. on the go. Check her website out. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, we'll be talking about pack rafting. First of all, what is it? A pack raft is an inflatable that's small enough to fit in a backpack, and it has opened up the backcountry in a way that has never been true before. That's how this family is going around the inlet. Rivers, lakes, even ocean bays no longer stand in the way of a cross-country trek. My guest will be Roman Dial, who is one of Alaska's most famous backcountry trekkers, as a pioneer of wilderness racing and as a star of reality TV, and Jim Gomsky of the Alaska Kayak Academy, who teaches pack rafting, including having a teen summer camp for learning to pack raft. And here's where you come in. We need questions for Roman and Jim and comments for them to bounce off of. If there's anything you'd like to know, check out our Facebook page at Outdoor Explorer and help us build the show. I'd be interested in anecdotes, pictures, videos, concerns, ideas, anything you have to share. We're trying to build a community around the show, and we need your help to take full advantage of that opportunity. And of course, we'll still be talking about summer camps on Outdoor Explorer Facebook page, so please weigh in on that too. That's our show for today. Thanks for being with us. Get with us on Facebook. And thanks to Kristen Spack, who is our producer and engineer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Happy trails.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.